Welcome back to Podcast Recovery, everyone. We're your hosts, David O.
And Carly R.
God, it's so weird. She got married. Her last initial is actually S, but she goes by Carly R. She's S.
Wait, no, which one is your married?
S would be my
okay, but you
name.
Go by your maiden.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So today we're joined by our very special guest and amazing friend, Molly. How are
Thank
you doing?
You. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm tired, but I'm all right.
You're tired. How are you, Eric?
I'm fine.
Good. Yeah. Good. Okay. So, where are you from, Molly?
I'm from Baltimore County, Maryland.
Mm-hmm. And when were you first introduced to recovery?
Probably like 2008.
Mm-hmm. Just didn't stick first time.
Well, yeah, I tried the whole recovery thing for about a couple months, and then went back out. But I mean, when I say like I tried, I didn't give it like an honest effort. Like, yeah. I went to an outpatient program, and I like that's how I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. But I wasn't like ever really planning on like getting a sponsor or like working the program.
Yeah. And how long have you been clean?
9 years.
9 years.
9 years.
I know. We're gonna celebrate 10.
Yeah.
A week or so apart.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. I like lose track of my clean time.
After year five, I was just sort of like, eh, it is.
I like when we at my home group when we were setting the date, I was like, how many years do I have? I know it's terrible. It's terrible.
But without further ado, I'm gonna turn it over to you to share your story with us. So take it away.
Cool. All right. So again, my name's Molly and I'm an addict. I feel like I have to start that way. growing up, I had a really nice childhood. Like, nothing traumatic, nothing crazy.
In Baltimore County did you grow up?
Northern Baltimore County. Like, pretty much where... Have you been to my house?
No.
Okay, so, like, do you know where, like, Hunt Valley is?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, by the Wegmans over there. That's,
did you
like,
go to Delaney?
Where I... Yeah.
Well, of course you did.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So actually I've kind of made my way back now to where I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
I like started out like northern, like Hunt Valley, and then as I got older, like went towards Towson, and now I'm back where I started.
Yeah.
And I love it there. Nathan and I want to stay there.
Yeah.
It's a nice area. But so I had a good childhood. I mean, it was my parents and my brother who's 18 months younger than me. Mm-hmm. And you know, we never needed anything. I mean, I'm mm-hmm. sure we wanted things, but our needs were met. And we just, yeah, it was normal. My parents drank every night. They had like mm-hmm. a couple beers every night.
Yeah.
You know, they sat on the couch and watched their sitcoms, and it was normal.
Yeah.
Actually, when I was in middle school and, I mean, we can get more into it, but I was like starting to like smoke weed, and my mm-hmm. brother and I both, we were kind of like partners in crime, and we were getting in trouble. The school had like recommended my parents take us to, oh gosh, I wish I remember what it was called, but it was some like drug program.
Oh.
It was in Cockeysville, and it was like some kind of like drug and alcohol program for like younger people.
Do they still do DARE? Is DARE still a thing?
See, it reminds me of that.
It is still a thing.
Yeah, it was some kind of, I think it was called First Step. I want to say it was called First Step. I don't know if anybody else ever experienced
Google it, Eric.
Why is DARE still a thing?
Why is DARE? It's clearly,
I don't know.
Clearly a failure. We have four failures sitting in this room.
They focus now, I don't know if this was the case back when we had it, but they focus now on more just lifestyle in general.
Okay.
It's not just drugs.
Are they honest, though?
Interesting.
Are who honest?
The DARE people. They are not honest when I was a child.
It is. Now comes in a... We've had a Baltimore County cop come into the school. And
yeah, I had a cop do it.
They need like a scared straight kind of... But you know, I don't even know if it would work. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it was like... It was like counseling, but they never introduced me. Like, that's not mm-hmm. where I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. I don't remember them ever like talking about it. It was more like a counseling kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And they did drug test me, though. And this was in middle school.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And, you know,
that's the youngest drug test I've ever heard.
Yeah. I was getting drug tested like maybe weekly or something in middle school.
That's crazy.
And I was only smoking weed at the time.
Yeah.
And drinking. But I remember in one of the counseling sessions, like, just telling them about my home life and the counselor being like, that's not really normal for, like, your parents to just drink every single night. I mean, to me, it was very normal. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time anybody had ever said something to me like that might not be the norm.
Yeah.
But my parents were never like, they weren't by any means like getting shit faced mm-hmm. every night. And like, they were like, my father was the bigger drinker and he actually got like nicer when he drank. He was he's like the sweetest man ever. He's never mean, but like, so I never saw it as a problem where I'm getting at. So later in my story, and we'll talk about it, I have a lot of, like, addiction is like a family disease, and mm-hmm. I have a lot of that would come out, but, you know, that's how it was growing up. And, you know, I started drinking from an early age, started smoking weed. Drinking from the beginning was, like, very unmanageable for me, like,
What was your from first the jump.
Drink? Aftershock. Do you know what that is?
What is Aftershock?
I feel like it's...
I don't even know what that is. It was like the precursor to Four Loko?
Not Four Loko.
That's what came to my mind too.
But there's another drink that everybody drinks now that I think came out after I stopped drinking. What is that stuff? It's like a spicy, like cinnamon kind of drink.
Oh, Fireball?
Yeah. I feel like it was the precursor to Fireball.
Cinnamon schnapps.
Yeah, so
that's what Aftershock is?
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible.
Red hot and cool cinnamon or liquor.
Ugh. So, and the thing about Aftershock is it had, it had candy, like rock candy on the inside of the bottle.
Oh, I do know.
I don't know if you were supposed to like break the glass and eat the rock candy, but like I feel like it appealed to young people.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
This looks disgusting, Molly. Like the color, it doesn't look
I
like something you should
screen.
Be drinking.
That's hilarious. But doesn't it look so targeted to like younger people?
Yes.
It's targeted to like a sci-fi audience. Like I
love sci-fi though.
Yeah, well, there you go.
So, but I mean, I didn't purchase it. It was actually, I don't know, do you know Trish? Dave sees?
Yeah.
Okay. So Trish and I were next door neighbors growing up. I don't know if you knew this about us. We are close childhood friends.
Makes sense.
Growing up, that was, and my her parents were just at my mom's house in Florida. Mm-hmm. Like they're best friends.
Yeah.
And so we grew up like just alongside each other. Mm-hmm. And she has an older brother. And her older brother was drinking in the basement and he let me have half of a shot. And like, I'm sure I like really played it up too. But like after that, like it was kind of just my main focus was like what else I can get and try. And so Trish and I talk about this a lot. Like just the drinks that we would drink and her parents always had like Malibu rum that we were like mixing with some kind of juice and just really just whatever we could get our hands on. And, that was just like the early stages of my drinking. And it was just, it was just like experimental at that point. But like very quickly, my drinking turned really like dark.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a blackout drinker. Like I black out every time I drink. I don't I never understood why that happened to me and not everyone else. But I mean, I remember being at like Thanksgiving with my family and they were all like, you know, they would celebrate and drink and I would be stealing the booze. And I remember like walking home in the rain, like just freaking, I was a disaster.
Yeah.
So just like an example of like how I was as a drinker. Like I remember my cousin's wedding in Florida and my whole family was there and nobody carded me. There was like an open bar and I got so hammered. I tried to go home with one of the groomsmen. They were way older than me.
Yeah.
My family like tried to stop me. And I remember waking up the next morning and I had like the garter around my leg. And I was in my dress and I woke up just not remembering anything. And my whole family just so pissed at me. And I was like, what the fuck happened last night? And that was just how life with me was. So my drinking, very unmanageable always. And I ran with that for a long time. So like smoking weed. So my brother actually tried that before me with Trish's brother. And they got caught and they like threw it into like a the back room in my house, and it was like on the floor, and I had no idea what weed looked like, but I wanted to try it, right? So yeah. I like scraped it up, probably with like a pile of dust, probably with some like rat poisoning that was back there. I didn't even know what I was looking for, and I scraped it up into a bag, and I took it to my friend's house, and we called like the eighth grade boys, and we were like, how do you do this?
I'm having like and, such flashbacks right now. Oh my God.
Yeah. And they like told us how to make like a tinfoil bowl, but I'm pretty sure we like rolled a blunt out of tinfoil. Disgusting. So anyway, just like those kinds of stuff. But you know, oh, okay. So also I want to say like ninth grade, you know, I'd found out my brother was smoking pot, and then I found out that my dad was. And I remember like specifically thinking that, you know, my dad is somebody I look up to. Like, he's a good man. He's like a functioning member of society, you know. And I thought like it can't be that bad if like he does it. And, you know, then we would like steal his weed, and that was like one of the ways I was getting it. And so my dad had like told me, you know, just I don't think that they were like allowing me necessarily to smoke pot. I mean, I guess they kind of were, but they were, you know, my dad had the talk with me, just like stick to the natural things, you know?
Yeah.
And I did for a long time. And I was like proud of myself because, you know, other people in like high school and my friends were like starting to get into coke and other things. And I was like very strictly weed and alcohol. And even when I graduated high school, still just the alcohol and the weed. And but yeah, still the whole time extremely unmanageable with the drinking. Actually quit drinking during senior week, like of all times.
What?
Yeah, because
yeah, I'm not when.
I blacked out and I like cheated on my boyfriend and I was like devastated and I was like, I can't control this. And like, so I have to quit drinking now to prove myself to him. I was so codependent. Another story, but so
not an outside issue on podcast recovery,
right? Yeah, so yeah, codependency was a big part of my like using, and yeah, so okay, so I in high school was really not a good okay, so I feel like I'm worried about like spending too much time on like my background, but you know, I'll speed it up. So yeah, for sure. So, but like in high school, I was really like, I just had no desire to do anything with my life except for party. Right.
Yeah.
I didn't go to school. Mm-hmm. I was like in this like program for kids who were like failing high school. I failed my junior year because I just missed so many days of school. I was always in I was always suspended. I was just, yeah, I was not a good student or child at the time. And then senior year when people were like leaving half day and they were like, you know, doing work release and stuff like that, I was doing my senior year. So I graduated on time, but I did half the day like making up for my junior year. So I really had no aspirations. I didn't take my SATs. I wasn't planning on going to college. I didn't give a shit about any of that. I went to community college just to like get my parents off my back and just to like keep up appearances, but still just like partying as hard as I possibly could. I had this group of girls I hung with. It was four of us. Really funny. Like, it's such a small world, and one of them is actually celebrating at my home group tomorrow, so I'm really excited about that. Nice. But yeah, so it was like these four girls that I, you know, partied with really hard, and we were just kind of like the group that was like always down to, you know, just get wasted. But yeah, just drinking was taking me to really like bad places, and like I was waking up in the morning like after blacking out and like waking up in random people's beds and like just really ashamed of myself.
Yeah.
And so those friends that I was talking about that were doing other things, you know, it started not to seem so bad anymore because I already hated myself from where the drinking was taking me. So I did eventually like, okay, so back to like when I was saying that my dad, like when I found out that him and my brother were smoking weed, and I was like, it doesn't seem so bad. Well, I partied a lot with my brother because he was close in age to me. And one night, him and his friends were doing coke, and I was like, wow, like I looked up to my brother and I wanted him to like think highly of me. And when I found out that like
cocaine will do that,
when I found out that he, that was something that he would do, I was like, okay, cool. Then like, yeah, he won't think I'm a piece of shit. He already thought I was a piece of shit from the way I acted when I was drinking, but he's not going to think any less of me because like we're doing it together. Mm-hmm. Right. So that was the first time I tried something else. I tried coke, to speed things up a little bit. You know, one of my girlfriends, I knew she was using heroin, every time we hung out, and it kind of became like, okay, you're doing your drug, you're doing your coke, I'm doing my heroin. Mm-hmm. Like, and that was our thing. And then, you know, at some point I just finally surrendered and I was like, whatever. And I tried like, I tried a pill. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. Mm-hmm. And I loved the way it made me feel. And that's how I got into that whole like lifestyle. And that was really, you know, opiates are my drug of choice. Mm-hmm. You know, so, okay. So I'm going to fast forward a little bit because I feel like I spent a long time talking about like the beginning.
That's my fault partially.
No, it's okay. It's okay. So, and you know what? I never really get into that because I like at meetings, like people have heard my story. So anyway, you know, fast forward. So, you know, I'm working. I have no aspirations in life. I'm working as a shampoo girl at a hair salon. I'm dating this guy who hangs out with the pill crowd, like the drug crowd. And I'm dating this guy, and really not even because I like him, just because his group is where I can get like what I want. Mm-hmm. And I can be a part of that group and have access to like pills. So I'm making money and tips. He's worthless. He doesn't have a job. He drives my car that my parents pay for. He drops me off at work and looks for things to steal all day to sell, pretty much stealing from my parents' house and selling jewelry, you know.
Yeah.
And then I always like turned a blind eye to these things. Mm-hmm. Like I like to be I would be fully aware that he would go to my parents' house when they weren't there and steal their stuff. And then he'd show up with like $1,000 and say he got it from a scratch off. And I'm like, wonderful. Great.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, it's just that, like, denial and just basically living to just feel okay because mm-hmm. I was going through the withdrawal and I was, like, physically addicted, right? So people ended up doing heroin because, like, pills, you know, get expensive, right? But I didn't want to be those people. You know, I had that, like, you know, I'm better than that.
Yes,
so I started using 100%. Fentanyl.
Oh, God. Oh, that went the complete opposite way. I thought you were I never did heroin. I went straight to pills. No, fucking fentanyl.
Isn't that our second week in a row where it was like, yeah, you know what, heroin?
Fentanyl.
Yeah, that
fentanyl.
Is.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. So the fentanyl patches and like, you know, you don't just stick them on you. You do some other stuff with them.
Did you smoke them?
I did.
Oh, that's so sketchy.
So that became my drug of choice. And shit was wild. Yeah. Like, I'm glad I'm still alive.
Yeah.
And then actually later, fentanyl patches are fucking expensive and hard to come by, right? You got to find somebody with like cancer or something crazy.
Oh, God.
Think about that statement.
So
that's, I'm, oh, God.
Yeah. And actually,
you have cancer, hook me up, bro.
No, it was this old man. Everybody knew, okay, this old man, I don't think he's alive anymore, but he was on dialysis and like.
Probably not. You guys stole all his fentanyl.
No, he was a drug dealer through and through. Yeah. And, I would meet up with him. One time I met up with him, he was admitted to the hospital and I came again.
No, you didn't.
I swear to God, he had a roommate too. And I went up in the hospital in his room and bought fentanyl patches from him. Wow. And the nurse was in the room, but I was wearing scrubs. At the time I wasn't a nurse. I was an esthetician and we wore scrubs. And so I was just like
blended in.
I was really hoping that you just put them on to like blend in to get the drugs.
Yeah, just like full ninja mode.
Yeah. kind of, but it was super sketch, right?
Wow.
So I did try dope at one. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I like, do you like how I say dope? It makes me feel better than saying on a podcast heroin.
Yeah.
So I did try it, but like I didn't. So one, it was probably not even real. Mm-hmm. And two, like my using fentanyl, it didn't do shit to me. Like,
yeah.
So yeah. I ended up just like, I was miserable, right? Mm-hmm. I was miserable for a long time because I was just living this life where I was sick every morning, right? And I was stealing and just doing things that like just made me feel horrible and like dragging my family through the dirt through all of this. And my brother hated me and he thought I was scum. And I didn't know like a way out. And so I went to my parents and I was like, look, I have a problem and like I need help. And obviously they knew and they were like, okay. And they talked to some people, they talked to like friends or just anybody that they had knew that could help. And they ended up finding this like outpatient treatment center that they put me in. And it's actually, Nathan went to the same one, but he went to like the Ellicott City one, Colmac.
Colmac.
I went to Colmac.
So I went to Colmac in Towson.
That's where I went.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So I went there in like maybe like 2008 or something. And I didn't finish the program. I did not finish. But they did introduce me to NA. And I was like, this is cool, man. Like, this is cool. But, like, I'm not going to get a sponsor and I'm not going to do the whole thing. But I'm going to come to meetings. Like, I'm going to meet people and stuff. And I was still dating the guy. And we got – I was not feeling well one day. And it was, like, 90 days into it. And so I was like, well, I'm going to get a pill because I don't feel well today. And – but that's just – just today. And then he was like, well, I'm just gonna do one as well. And I'm like, okay, fine, just today. And then, you know, today turned into tomorrow the next day and a year later. And actually, if I'm thinking about it, I think the fentanyl came in the second time. I think it was just pills the first time and the fentanyl came in and just made shit a whole lot worse after I had already been introduced to recovery a little bit. And the second time, okay, so a year later, fast forward, I am in a motel. So I had stolen a bunch of money from my parents and I was way too ashamed to face them. So I took the money and I was staying in a sketch ass motel off Lock Raven Boulevard.
As soon as you say Lock Raven Boulevard, you're like, oh yeah.
Yeah. It's dude. Sketchy. And I was just like, just using fentanyl and that's it. And my mom, I had blocked her number. Like, I was just so ashamed. And she had like sent me like a Facebook message or something and told me like, you need to come home. You're in trouble. Like, no, you're not in trouble. Like, you're in danger or something, right? Anyway, she got me to come home. And turns out, like, I think there was a warrant for the guy I was with arrest. Actually, I was staying with another guy, too, and there was, like, warrants out for their arrest. And she was – but I was ready to come home. You know, I was ready to stop living like that and ready to get help again. And so she wanted me to go inpatient. You know, she didn't think the outpatient worked. And I was so codependent on this guy. And I was like, I will not leave. Like, you will have to physically pick me up. And
I just don't get it. Guys suck so bad.
This guy really sucked.
Yeah, they do. They always fucking do.
He was just.
And women just get wrapped up.
Dude, he was gross too. Oh my God. I don't want to spend too much time on it. But like, my brother does impressions. And like, he would like. Sorry. My mom smokes cigarettes and he would like pick her cigarette butts out of the ashtray and like smoke them. Like so gnarly, dude. Yeah. So I know. Like
Everyone here has picked up cigarettes.
I have never done that.
Of a fucking
I have never done that.
I have never done that.
Really? But dude, I didn't care about cigarettes that much.
Never.
Because I didn't want to spend the money on it.
Right.
Them.
I was never really a cigarette smoker.
Now I'll qualify that. Yeah, have I ever drank in a cigarette butt in a random beer?
For
absolutely. But I've never smoked just a loose butt. That's gross.
I have smoked loose butts.
Well, I appreciate
Brad
your
did
honesty.
That last night.
See? I did that. That is something Brad would do.
Brad found it in the crack of the sidewalk outside of Kelsey's.
God damn it, Brad.
He said, ooh, cigarette. Picked it up, lit it.
Son of a bitch, Brad. Okay.
Brad?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my. Last night?
Uh-huh.
With some
not
clean
uncommon,
time.
Guys.
That's Brad, good. Though. That's Brad.
Good. So, yeah. This time, I you know, I had seen that life was not any better on the outside. I was truly miserable. I was truly just, like, tired, worn out, broken down, broke, you know. And I went to – okay, so I went back to the same outpatient center. But I did have a feeling that things would be different this time because I wanted it this time. Like, I was broken. I was done. And I just felt it. And I went – to there, and then I used to have this huge like problem with being late, but now I'm like always early to things, not necessarily today, but until I had kids, I did get better with it, but I got kicked out of the program. I did the full program, but the aftercare I got kicked out because I just couldn't show up to anything on time in early recovery. Oh, wait, let me back up just a smidge. Like, they did put me on Suboxone, right? So I did the whole Suboxone thing. There was a program. How are we on timing?
You're good.
Are you sure?
Yeah, 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 you're fine.
Okay. So the Suboxone thing, right? So they offered me Suboxone, and I, you know, was a using addict, and I'm like, yeah, give me this. And I was so scared of going through withdrawal. Like, that's what kept me using for so long, is because I was just absolutely terrified to go through it. And the Suboxone just seemed like an easier way, but it was not. Because I stayed on the Suboxone for 2 years. I went to meetings. I found my home group that we were just talking about. So I remember it was like a rainy night, and it's like this church in the cemetery, and the lights were out, and it's candlelight, and it just felt super comfortable.
Oh yeah, it was a great meeting.
Yeah, and I ended up staying at that home group for a long time, and I found a sponsor, and the sponsor, like, she, you know, she was really gentle about the Suboxone, in the sense that, like, she was like, not like, you can't be here because you're on Suboxone.
Yeah.
Not even like you're not clean. Just like, you know, we're not going to work steps. We're going to do like pamphlets. And like kind of left it up to me to decide.
Yeah.
And after sticking around and like consistently going to meetings for 2 years, I just decided that it was time for me to get off of it. And like I did, you know, restart my – my clean time. And, you know, let's be honest, like when I was on Suboxone, like I was selling it, like I was living dirty, you know, I was like still using, and that's just my opinion. That's my feelings towards it. But I'm grateful for it in the sense that it like gave me the opportunity to like be well enough to get into the doors of the program. And I also had like built this foundation for myself where I had the support that I needed when it was time to get off of it. And I had the experience of friends who had been on it previously. And they kind of walked me through getting off of it. And I wasn't as scared because I had these people and their experiences, and I called them and I'm like, I don't see a light at the end of the tunnel. Like, it's taking forever and I feel horrible. And they're like, you know, just push through it. And like, you're going to feel like this tomorrow. And just like they walked me through it, and they forced me to go to meetings, and I didn't want to because I felt awful. And eventually, you know, I did, I got through it. And, you know, that's kind of like where my journey started. Like, because after that, I felt like I was finally, like clear-headed enough to like start working steps and start the actual, like, I don't know what you call it, but of the program.
Yeah.
Like the meat of the program. So, you know, I was really did the recovery thing for like a year, just, you know, went to meetings, you know, worked on that foundation. And eventually I hit this point where like, okay, like what am I going to do with my life? Like, I've never even thought that, you know, I could make anything of my life. I don't know why, but I never saw myself as this like successful person. And I remember my sponsor being like, okay, what do you want to do with your life? And me just like wishing so badly I could get to this like comfortable spot where like I knew what I wanted to do with my life and have like a plan for myself. And so I remember like looking up jobs, right? Like I did this with my sponsor, and I saw like I was looking up all these different jobs, and I came across nursing and I had never considered it before because it seemed hard. And I saw that you only needed 2 years of school to become a nurse, your associate's degree and like nursing school, and you could start out making like $60,000-$70,000 an hour. And I'm not an hour. $70,000 a Musk year. Money over here. I wish. Oh my God. So I was like, let's try this, right? And actually, one of the four girls that I used to party with, I said one of them celebrating my home group tomorrow. Another one was in...
You can drop her name. It's fine if you want.
The other one? Okay, so her name was Myra. I don't know if you ever came across her. She was... No. Okay, she was also in the other fellowship. And okay. It doesn't matter even if I drop her name because she moved to Dubai. She's doing very well. I assume, still sober. But she ended up moving to Dubai. But, you know, it's just kind of interesting. And I know I'm getting like a little off topic with this. But the four girls, right, mm-hmm. that we partied mm-hmm. real hard with.
I feel like you were like the mean girls.
Girls? We were too messy to even be mean girls. You know?
The messy girls. That's cool.
We were fucking messy. Like, so I remember we would go to parties and people would be like, two of my friends were like a little more together than me and Myra. We were the fucking hot messes. Mm-hmm. And they'd be like, dude, every time your friends go to the bathroom, they rip down the shower curtain. We were that, like, we couldn't even stand up. We would just rip down the shower curtain, fall in the bathtub every time we went to the bathroom. But anyway, okay, so Myra's doing well, I assume. I haven't talked to her in a little bit. The time difference is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jenny's celebrating tomorrow, mm-hmm. and the other one died, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So she actually seemed like she was doing well. She went off to mm-hmm. college, and then I found out her mom, like, posted on Facebook. We had lost touch and that she had died, and I'm pretty sure she died of, like, liver failure, like drinking.
Mm. Oh, drinking. God.
Yeah, so young, dude. She's younger than me. Yeah, but like as a direct result of this disease, but mm-hmm. it's just crazy, like how the four of our futures panned out.
Yeah.
You know, one died and the rest are in the program. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so nursing, back to nursing. The girl Myra, right? She's sober. She's in AA and we're hanging out. Like I'm going to AA meetings. She's coming to NA meetings with me. I'm single. I have an apartment. Like this is really fast forwarding things, but like I'm single. I have an apartment. I left that dude, right?
Yes.
I learned in recovery that like, so either him and I were just going to go down together. And he was not going up, okay? So, like, either I was going to go up alone or we were going to go down together. And I just moved out of our apartment with my sponsor, moved me out. Caroline, who's my best friend, mm-hmm. who I met in recovery. Alec. Do they all remember Alec?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They moved me out into my apartment by myself. And I loved it, dude. I lived in that apartment by myself. And I was in recovery and things were great. And I went back to school. And I didn't know what I had wanted to do. But I was thinking about the nursing thing. And Myra told me that she was thinking about the nursing thing. And she gave me the advisors, like, information. Mm-hmm. And I think Caroline might have taken me to, you know, CCBC. Mm-hmm. And that's where my journey in nursing started. And like, I remember my mom telling me that, you know, she was worried that like, cause she knew like my history with school and like, she was just like, this might be like really hard for you. But mm-hmm. I worked extra fucking hard.
We're different animals when we get clean and go to school.
Yeah, so I worked, I felt like I needed to work like twice as hard as everyone else because like my brain cells are burnt, dude.
Okay, maybe not Carly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the same animal, using and not using.
But you always had good grades, didn't you? Yeah, so you're fine.
I actually tried this time, right?
Yeah.
So I ended up doing really well in nursing school mm-hmm. and I ended up getting a job in the emergency department where I still work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's crazy. I right now have a student. I teach a lot. Like I have like externs that follow. Like, so I've been there for like 4.5 years and that's a long time for the ER. There's like a big,
there's a burnout. Right?
Yeah, for sure. And so the experienced nurses are basically always teaching the new nurses. And and that's why I said I have a work hangover because I'm literally for 12 hours explaining everything that mm-hmm. I do and it's exhausting. But, you know, I say this like just because it's so crazy that I ended up becoming a nurse. Like I never saw myself becoming successful in anything and mm-hmm. having a career. And so that was like a really big deal for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you know, like I met somebody in recovery and we ended up getting married. David married us. So cool.
You were the very first ceremony I ever did.
Yeah.
It was mind-blowing.
Yeah, so my husband's in recovery, and that was so awesome.
I want to digress real quick, because like the whole Wolfpack, all our guys were hanging out, and he was dating another girl with like
he had another girlfriend
shortly prior to you. And then he's just constantly talking about this Molly chick. He's like, yeah, I think I'm going to, like, and we're like, who the fuck is Molly? Like, none of us knew, because you were in a completely different area. You were in like Northeast or Northwest, whatever.
Northeast.
And we were just like, who the fuck? I was like, I don't like this chick. Like,
you didn't like me?
I don't even know her. You're just talking about her so much. Like, whoever this fucking Molly chick is, and I met you. And
I don't like her.
And I was like, oh, she's a peach. I was like, she's a gem.
Dana gets jealous.
I do.
So it was really cool, though, because he was in a relationship, and I had gotten out of a relationship. So I was in early recovery still with that guy, right? Mm-hmm. And so then I moved out into an apartment by myself, and like I was trying to focus on myself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so Nathan and I each had a period of like finding ourselves before we met each other in like early recovery. And then, I was in the Northeast area and he was West Side, and I never like wandered over to West Side.
No, I didn't know who you were.
Yeah. And how we actually met each other was through my friend Caroline, who I met in recovery and is my best friend. And Caroline's was friends with Stephanie. Mm-hmm. And so Caroline kind of introduced me to Nathan, and and now we're married and we have two kids, and it's great, dude. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you're married. Yeah. You have a kid.
Yeah.
But it's cool. So we both had that time of just like, you know, working on ourselves and getting to know ourselves. And so that's cool. You know, it's just crazy the life that I live today, because like I said, I was so messy in my past. Mm-hmm. And like, I just never saw myself having like being one of those people, like, right? Like, so I work a full-time job. And I have a 2 and 9 months and a 9 month old. And, you know, I am home with my kids when I'm not at work. And then, and then I work my job. And so anyway, this week has been like a kind of interesting week in my recovery. Mm-hmm. So I've had this sponsor for the past like 7 years, right? Mm-hmm. And, with COVID, how much longer are we at?
You're good.
You're sure?
Yeah, we're
you're so anxious about this timing, guys. Right, I'm so sorry. So anyway,
it's his fault. You put the time in your mind.
I'm super paranoid about it. I told you I was gonna be. Okay. I know, so I'm like rushing parts of my story because feel like, okay. So let me back up just for a second, right? So obviously, like, if you've been in recovery for a little while, you've experienced like the changes because of COVID. And I understand that like some people really thrived and got to more meetings with like Zoom, right? So for me, I had my son and my first son, and, you know, a little while, so life really changed for me.
Yeah,
and
like right before COVID. Yeah.
So I had him in May and COVID really hit that winter. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my meeting attendance dropped off because I have a child and I work, you know, most meetings are at 7:30, 8:00. Mm-hmm. I get off work at 7:30. And then we have my home group. So that's 3 nights a week. Then we have my home group, 4, Nathan's, 5. You know, I want to actually some nights, well, my husband's home, like do laundry, take care of myself, you know? So it's harder to get to meetings. And then COVID hit and makes life even harder. I get pregnant with another child.
Baby.
Yeah, for sure. He was, for sure. But, you know, my recovery shifted in the sense that like I became less connected, and I have this sponsor, right? And I've had this sponsor for like 7 years. She's also a nurse and we became really close friends. She was one of the bridesmaids in my wedding, and I just kind of got complacent in my recovery. And a little while ago, I was at my home group and this girl shared, and she shared about how people around like 10, 15 years clean, like, not necessarily go back out and start using, but she's noticed this trend of people like stopping going to meetings and just kind of phasing out. And I had to share because I just, that like really perked my ears up. And because I've been feeling like that's where I'm in this place where I'm like, oh, like I still have the desire to be clean. You know, Nathan and I, my husband, being in recovery, that's kind of like a, not necessarily a deal breaker, but like, you know, we have this like understanding that like, yeah, we're both, you know, clean, gonna live a life, this lifestyle, and be clean. But you know, do I really need to go to meetings? Like, I don't really have time, mm-hmm, for this. And just feeling that like complacency, right?
Yeah.
So this seed got planted in my head that like, okay, I was either going to kind of phase out like one of those people, or I was going to make like some serious changes. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I kind of made this like decision with myself that I was going to get a new sponsor, right? Mm-hmm. So just nothing personal with my last sponsor. We are very close friends, and I love her. And it, you know, it's just about me, and like I needed to do something to like reignite my recovery. And yeah, so actually this past week, like I changed sponsors. Nice. And like I feel more like in control of my recovery than I have in a long time.
That's awesome. You know?
Yeah. Just because like I don't want to be one of those people that doesn't want to do, that just stays complacent because they're afraid of doing something that's going to be tough.
Yeah.
And it did, it hurt my heart, you know, when I did tell my sponsor that I was changing sponsors, because, you know, there's a lot of history there. Yeah. It just did hurt my heart. But, you know, this is going to be good, and this is going to, you know, so I kept kind of making these excuses like, COVID, when COVID's over, like I'm gonna make changes in my recovery, mm-hmm, after I have the baby. And like the time has finally come where it's like, okay, like it's time. And I had been sitting on my 12 step for a while, and I'm like, okay, like it's time. So yeah, so good things are coming in my recovery, let's hope. Yeah, so you know, I'm finally at that point in my life where like, okay, like things are situated, like with my kids, and like it's time to focus back on that.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we definitely have some questions for, okay, you. Carly, would you like to go first?
No.
No, I always go first.
I had to ask. It's chivalrous. Okay. all right. Just knowing your history, you didn't talk about it, but I'm going to bring it up. You've had some friends who, we talked about it before the podcast, but that didn't like started in recovery and then have sort of fallen off.
Yeah.
How have you had to deal with that, like managing those sort of maybe borderline toxic relationships that like you can't really put yourself in anymore?
Oh man, are you thinking about what I'm thinking, like the person that I'm thinking about?
Yeah, a couple people.
Oh, a couple people?
Who's the person?
Dude, we can't put that person out there. Yeah, we're not putting that person out there. That's me.
We'll talk about it.
So, yeah, I mean, there was a situation that was really difficult because, okay, so I've mentioned her a few times, my friend Caroline, right? Mm-hmm. So in early recovery, it was my friend Caroline, and it was this other girl, and we were kind of like this trio, and, you know, we celebrated like 3 or so years together, and we were like, yeah, we're all still here. And these girls, my sponsor, my sponsee, my best friend, my husband's sister, and this other girl were going to be the bridesmaids in my wedding, and then one of them started using, mm-hmm, and, you know, it did kind of crush me just because I hadn't, yeah, experienced like a close friend of mine using. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't want to be that person that just like shuns, you know, somebody because they're using.
But it's tough. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But I also had like a head full of recovery, and like, I know what you're, mm-hmm, supposed to do to like protect yourself. And I tried to hang on to that relationship, the one I'm talking about, and it got, I think it had been toxic way before it, you know, she had started using. It was like a toxic friendship. And so things had just kind of gotten messy, like around like my bridal shower, and, you know, so I think, you know, there was another friend that was using as well, mm-hmm, that had went back out, and they kind of linked up. And you know, we were talking about my bachelorette party. We were going to do in Ocean City, and they were talking about getting a separate room together, and they were going to like do their thing. And I was just like, no, dude, like this is not.
Yeah, it's not about
yeah,
you.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, this is just getting to be. And then there was just like, you know, she was talking about me and saying I was like this horrible friend and horrible person. I'm like, why do I want this person in my wedding? You know? Mm-hmm. And so I asked them, you know, like, in a, I feel like I did it in a loving and caring way. I don't know. But, you know.
I can't see you being mean.
I know. So. Well, there was, like, I am kind of still, like, a doormat. Like, it's one of my defects that I'm still working on. Mm-hmm. But I'm a huge pushover. And that's how that friendship that's, you know, has that plays a part in, like, it being a toxic relationship. Because sometimes people do take advantage of that. And they know that's something I struggle with. And you know, sometimes people do. You know, they take advantage of that. But anyway, I'm not trying to say that, like, I'm a victim or anything. Because, like, I have the self-awareness through this program, you know. And I'm able to work on those things. But, yeah. So, I mean, I had to distance myself from that relationship. Yep. And it was painful.
Yep.
But, you know, I had to, like, love her from a distance. Mm-hmm. And just real quick, because it was wild. This person, so that was the conversation where I asked her to, like, not be in my bridal party, right? So that was the last conversation we had. And she told me that I was the worst friend she's ever had. And I was like, whatever, dude. So fast forward 5 years. 5 years, right? I blocked this person on all social media. It was like a relationship ending, and like I couldn't even, it was too painful to even like, and when people would say stuff about her, I would like, and I hate even admitting it because I'm just like, I don't want to know, but like it was painful. And I was like mourning that relationship. But 5 years later, she shows up the week at my home group the week before my anniversary. And, you know, I'm an adult. I talked to her and she was struggling. But then the next week was my anniversary, right? And so before the meeting, the women in my life got together to pray. And we asked her to join us. And it just felt so weird. Like it was like 1 year, one, two, and three, the same exact people praying in this circle. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What you got, Carly?
So earlier in your story, you mentioned that addiction runs kind of through your family. Does it run deeper than what you mentioned in your story?
Oh, hell yeah. And I'm very happy you asked me that, actually. That's one of the reasons I was excited to do this, because I have like a very ADD brain and like I bounce all over the place and I miss huge chunks that I mean to come back to, right?
Our stories are way too long.
Yeah, like, right. Exactly. Exactly. That's why I was like, what part do I even focus on today? So anyway, but I'm really happy you asked me that, right? So my dad, he ended up, so my parents split up when I was on Suboxone, right? So the first 2 years that I had like been coming around, but I'm on Suboxone, right? My parents split up and my dad was living in Florida and he eventually made his way down to like Delaware, right? So, he ended up like he was heartbroken over this separation and he ended up like just diving deep into like alcohol and these like toxic women, dude, toxic. And just full blown like kind of his alcoholism, dabbling in drugs, whatever, blew up, right? So right before my 1 year anniversary, my dad shows up on my doorstep of my apartment with my ex, right? And he's like, yeah, he shows up in his car. He literally has nothing but like his car. And he's like, I need help. Like, and so I'm like, so then my mom had moved to Florida. And it's just like, okay, like here I am. Like, so he moved into my apartment, right? So my dad's living in my apartment. I have 1 year clean. I'm like taking care of him. I don't know what else to do at this point, but to like integrate him into my recovery. Cause that's all I know. And like my meetings and my friend group, well, it got toxic, right? So my ex was using, my dad was using, I'm got 1 year clean. I'm like finding weed stems around my freaking apartment. Like, I don't know whose they are. And I was like, dude, this is not good. And so I kicked my dad out of my apartment so freaking hard. Oh my God. Like, hardest thing I had to do up to that point. You know, my dad, he took care of me. Like, he was always my biggest supporter and like enabler. And I had to kick him out. And I found a recovery house for him to go to and I paid a month's rent. And I was like, you're on your own, dude. Yeah. So he didn't end up staying clean from that time, right? But, you know, fast forward. Okay. So my husband and I are together at this point, and he's living in a recovery house with Matt and Jack. And our friend Jack, he had worked at, I can't remember, what was that recovery place?
Shepherd Pratt?
No, not Shepherd Pratt. It was like a rehab.
Mount Manor,
I want to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
I don't know. It might be something else. Whatever. Regardless. I think it was like a state-funded recovery place. Rehab. So Nate, my husband, called Jack, and Jack got him in there. And my dad went to a rehab, and I remember the day I picked him up from that rehab, dude. He looked rough, man. He had like a cane. He doesn't have a cane now. But he had to eventually like find it for himself, right? Like I couldn't do it for him. It didn't work when I tried, but like I gave him the resources he needed. And my dad has like, ugh, I'm a terrible person, but I have a horrible memory. Like probably like 6 years clean now. And yeah, he's worked in multiple treatment centers. He just got a new, so my dad just recently moved over to this area. He lives in Columbia, I think.
Oh, cool.
And there's like a recovery place around here that he just switched. He used to work for another one, but yeah, he's working in recovery now. He's doing really well.
That's awesome.
My brother, okay, so my brother, he had a bad problem with alcohol. And when my son was like a few months old, my brother would be calling me in alcohol withdrawal. And I would, in the like at 11 o'clock at night, you know, leave my baby, and I would take him to GBMC, to the emergency department, and sit with him. And the peer recovery coaches would talk to him. And we did this a couple times, and it was like, it was rough, dude. And then we sent him to like this fancy ass rehab. And he hated it. He hated it. Oh my God. But same thing with him. Like he had to kind of figure it out on his own, and he ended up going to an outpatient place, and he was sober for 2 years, and he actually recently relapsed, and it broke my heart. But you know, he's got to figure it out for himself. So yeah, I mean, Carly, I'm really glad you brought that up, because that's been like a huge part of my recovery. Like my mom lives in Florida, and just like being here and like trying to help my dad and my brother like have what I have and like a happy life, and like they look at my children and like, you know, they love them, and and you know, they want that for themselves, like this life, and I'm just trying to help them find that.
This is a combo question, so to the nursing. The fun aspect of this question is, what's the craziest thing you've seen? Like, because it's emergency, so I guarantee there's overdoses and shit in there that you deal with. So what's the craziest drug-related incident you've seen? And how has nursing changed your recovery?
That's an awesome question. That's a really good question. I'm glad you asked that. Oh, God, to the first question. That is really, really, really hard to answer. People will ask me what the craziest thing I've seen is, and there's just too much. Like I am a nurse in an emergency department in Baltimore City.
Enough.
Man, I don't even know. Like I had a patient very recently who was on like that flock of shit.
Oh my God.
And they're just like wiling out.
Yeah.
Like I don't like, I've just seen so much craziness. Drug related, you're saying? God, I don't, I've just seen all kinds of stuff, but yeah, like I can't pinpoint one, right? But I will say, right when you asked me to do this podcast, right, I was like, am I allowed to talk about putting people in body bags? Remember I asked you that? From overdoses, because I had recently, like right before you had asked me to do this, I put this man who overdosed in a body bag, and he was young. I mean, he was like in his 50s, but you know, he was otherwise like he fully died of an overdose. And it's sad. And I really did, like I physically did put this man in a body bag, like, and it's crazy. And, you know, I do this for a living. I do this all the time. And so let me just say, okay, my recovery is not something that I'm like open about in at my work, right? And the reason that is because, you know, when I became a nurse and like I work in the ED, so I deal with narcotics like on a daily basis. And yeah. I just didn't want people who have never met me before knowing that and being concerned about me handling narcotics and just that being an issue. Like I kind of wanted a clean slate. And the healthcare system, I think that they're not great at dealing with like substance abuse, and they are judgmental. And, you know, I wish that my recovery, and I hope to eventually get there where I can share that and feel comfortable sharing that with them. And there are some people, so we have substance abuse peer recovery coaches at my job, and they know. But, you know, I hope to eventually, because it does kind of feel like living a double life, right? But, you know, being a nurse, I do compartmentalize. Like, I have to, dude. Can't just, like, I can't get involved in the feelings of, like, all these people, like, these deaths and stuff. So I am at a place where, like, I do feel kind of separate from that, right? So, like, I think I could be more, like, compassionate, but it's just this weird area where I have to, like, separate myself.
You have to have a boundary.
Yeah, so, like, I don't, like, how you asked about, like, how does it affect my recovery? Well, it's helpful, okay? So I see these, like, every single day I see these, like, grown men and women, you know, and that are overdosed and given Narcan and just shitting all over themselves. And I'm like, this is not attractive. Like, it really makes, like, using, there is no romanticizing, glamorous aspect of it to me anymore. It's just like, ugh.
Yeah.
And these people, like, kind of look like zombies to me sometimes, right? So if somebody's like a substance abuse issue and they're just like, just really, you know, out of it, and we'll put them in a stretcher that's close to the, like, in view of the nurse's station to, like, keep them safe, right? So sometimes they'll be like say on a Friday night or something, just the hallways lined with these freaking zombies, like, it's wild. But anyway, how it helps my recovery is, like, you know, there is no glamorizing it. It does not look attractive. But it's crazy because I handle, like, narcotics on a daily basis. And I'm just, like, pulling dope and crack pipes out of people's pockets, like, every day.
And you still don't get high?
I don't, you know. Recently, I never want to use, like, the medication. I don't, since I compartmentalize it, like, giving the, like, morphine and the narcotics, like, I'm not usually tempted to, like, want to use them, right? But recently there was this woman that passed away, and I was going through her medications, and there was, like, this giant bottle of benzos, and she died. And I'm like, it's not like, you know, like, as a nurse, like, the narcotics are, like, it's, there's a system in place, so you would know if any are missing, but, like, nobody knows about this giant bottle of freaking Ativan. So that was, like, a situation that was a little, like, ooh.
Eric's but, just, you know, like, benzos,
right?
Delicious. A little cocktail for me. What do you got, Carly?
So my favorite question is, how is your addiction manifesting itself today? Looking right at it, right?
Yeah, man. I mean, I have my... Dude, full blown. I have my energy drink and my vape in my hand, and that is it.
Oh, is that one of
it's an Alani. Ooh, yeah, so it's Alani. It's got 200 milligrams of caffeine.
Holy shit.
I normally drink Bangs, which have like 300 milligrams.
Yeah, I tried Bang for the first time this past week in Florida because they didn't have any Red Bull. I don't like it. It's too much caffeine.
Like, yeah, I mean, I love it.
I like the Bang coffees.
I never tried them.
I tried Rainbow Unicorn.
Oh, yeah.
I had to.
It's like a Skittles kind of flavor, I feel
like.
Yeah,
it was very weird.
Yeah, I mean, so I used to just have an energy drink midday at work, right? It's like almost 13-hour shift. And then that has kind of, once I had kids, I'm like, oh, dude, I need an energy drink to deal with these kids. And then I, you know, I find myself like, it's the middle of the day, you know, my kids are taken care of, but all I've had is an energy drink and like vaping all day, no food, like so unhealthy. That's like my mom diet. But yeah, I mean, it's not great. But that's my full blown like caffeine, man.
You had a bunch of questions, so go ahead.
I was going to ask you a question, too, relating to her story, but I just wrote...
Oh, perfect.
I wrote something so ambiguous, I just wrote Carly question. And I'm like, fuck, what was I going to ask her? I don't even remember. Well, I've shortened shit now. All right. So you talked about... I'm going to see if I can remember it while she answers this. You talked about, like, just really having low self-esteem while you were out there.
Yeah.
And just not feeling good about yourself. So how did you build self-love and recovery?
That's a work in progress for sure. I mean, so I definitely have like gotten better in that aspect. Mm-hmm. You know, when I met Nathan and when I was single, being single is hard. It's tough on your self-esteem, right? So I was, God, when I met Nathan, like right before, when I was single, I was like super skinny, unhealthy, super tan, like fake tan, you know, like just all worried about like the outside. And then, you know, I've done some work on myself to make myself feel better on the inside. Mm-hmm. And so like through step work and through like sponsorship, and I wish I could like describe it better, but, you know, just like working on myself, like I've been able to work on like confidence and stuff like that. I did put a lot of work in the area where I said I was like a doormat, right? Mm-hmm. So I put a lot of work in like standing up for myself.
Yeah.
And I do feel like I'm starting to fall short in like these areas. Like my defects are more apparent because I haven't been working as strong as a program. And like, mm-hmm. I'm excited to, you know, get back into that and work on these things, because they've definitely been put, like working on my defects have been put on the back burner through like just, you know, kids and, mm-hmm. you know, life. So that area needs more work for sure. Mm-hmm. But just, yeah, working on like standing up for myself. And even just like I don't know if this really answers your question, but like just even the area of like how I got a new sponsor, like just for me, that's like standing up for like what I feel like I deserve.
Yeah.
And not to say that like I deserved more than the sponsor I had before, because she was great for me and like in the time that I needed it, but like for me, like I feel like, you know, I deserve to have like a fulfilling program. Yeah. And yeah, so just like doing something difficult and uncomfortable because like I feel like I deserve that. Mm-hmm. Like, does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah,
it was like a rare, very weird roundabout answer to your question.
No, that's good. I did remember it. Okay. So this is going to be for both of you.
Okay.
All right. So, in addiction, we always find people that are into the same things. Like you were dating guys that were doing the same shit that you were doing.
Right.
But you were not. Your husband was not doing the same things that you were doing. Mm-hmm. So how did that work? Like being in addiction and having a boyfriend, now husband, who was not like one of us. Like, how did you deal with that? Like, how did that play into your addiction?
Can you reword the question?
Okay. well, like she's like in a relationship, or uh-huh. like I would be in a relationship with a girl where we're like, we're bouncing things off each other. We're drug buddies.
Right.
Like we're in a toxic relationship together, but you weren't.
So like an active addiction, how did that work for me?
Yeah.
I don't know. It was kind of like a pattern the whole time that really? Like any guy that I was with, really, he wasn't using how I was using.
Really?
Yeah. With the exception of maybe one, but we weren't really dating. It was just like we would hang out and yeah. do drugs.
Yeah. That's sort of an anomaly, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know. I've never really thought about it. Like I've like looked at how recovery is and how, because he still drinks and like
yeah.
he does all those things, and I've like that has crossed my mind, but the other, like yeah. the flip side of it, I've never really considered or thought about.
Yeah. We're both in relationships with people who still drink occasionally. Like my wife went out last night with her friend and
That's right. I forgot that she's not in recovery.
Yeah, Kristen's not in recovery.
That's right. Yeah.
Dude, she drinks like 5 times a year. And she smoked pot twice and she was like, I didn't like it. And I'm like, what?
So I find that people, well, I mean, it only makes sense, but like people that are in recovery and they're in relationships with normies, right? Mm-hmm. That they are just like super normie and like barely drink.
Not my husband.
No.
Yeah, he drinks a shit ton, but okay. It's not unmanageable.
No.
Like, I don't think he's like.
No, he doesn't drink during the week. He drinks with his friends Friday and Saturday night, or one or the other, and like
which
has a couple beers during football. But
weirdly normal.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, he's a weekend warrior, but his life.
Well,
is
I don't think like as being a person in recovery that you'd be able to be with somebody who's unmanageable. You know, that would just totally affect your recovery.
Mm-hmm. Like it did. Like early in my relationship with Kristen, there were a couple times where she went out with her girlfriend and would come home and I'd already be in bed and she'd get in bed and just reek like alcohol. And I was like, you got to do something about this.
Yeah.
So I was like, it's just disrespectful to me. It's gross. Just handle your shit. Like, and it's resolved itself. So like, it's never happened again. And yeah, it adds a different dynamic to our recovery to have to deal with it on a home basis. So I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, I've never thought about like active addiction. Like,
yeah,
I mean,
Eric's doing his own thing. Don't mind.
For like, I get like, I can think back. Like, he knew what I was doing on the weekends, but he didn't know what I was doing during the week.
Yeah,
and he was okay with what I was doing on the weekends. Because like we would go out and we would have fun, and
so you were still kind of party. Drug buddies a little bit, like on the weekends you drink together,
we'd drink together,
yeah,
we'd do all that, but then he just wasn't into like the other stuff and he didn't care. And he didn't realize though
how bad it was. Interesting.
So I was like really good at hiding it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you were great at hiding it. All right, well Molly, we hold on, let me open my phone so I can actually get my shit together here.
Did you see me looking at Eric? Is that why you said that?
Yeah, don't pay attention.
Well, no, just because I did listen to Nathan's, which was like at the beginning, and Eric asked some really tough questions. So I was like, oh gosh, is Eric going to ask any questions?
Eric, do you want to ask a question? Do you have any good ones?
Tough questions.
He has very tough and in-depth questions.
Good. But they're good, yeah. But I was like, intimidated.
Now he's the Wizard of Oz. He's just the man by.
Yeah.
Let's see. Do I have any questions for you, Molly?
You don't have to ask me any questions.
I don't know. We could do a group question.
Oh, you want a group question?
Yeah, okay. Let's do a group question.
What you got, Eric?
So let's do something positive.
Okay.
I like this.
So I guess, you know, we've all kind of been around for a while and, you know, recovery evolves and changes. What are you doing for yourself, like now for your recovery that wasn't a part of your recovery when you first started? And then also, what is something that you're looking into starting to help with your recovery?
Okay. Well.
Tough question. Yeah, I knew it.
Tough question. I'll start. What am I doing now for my recovery that I wasn't doing at the beginning of my recovery? Well, I'm making a sweet podcast, talking to people around the world, spreading the message of hope. God, that was a lame answer.
But ditto. Ditto.
Yes, exactly. It was a shameless plug. I guess, honestly, investing more in my time. Like, really, because in early recovery, I was just so gung-ho about how many meetings I could hit a week and just all of that. And it, like, I burned myself out on meetings a little bit, and it got to a point where I really had to rein that in, because even in like my my early relationship with my wife, for the first couple of years, I was still 3, 4, 5 nights a week. It was like, okay, I'm gonna go to a meeting now, and it's never just an hour. Like, it's always like, get there early, you talk. Like, it's like a whole.
It's 3 hours.
It's a whole, like, it's a whole 3, 4 hour long process. And I was missing a lot of time. And now, like, I'm a dad. I can't
you have to like schedule those things. It's so with your hard, partner.
Isn't it?
Yeah. It's like you really have to work on communication of like when they're going out, when you're going out, so we can both have our own lives.
Yeah, and when they have work a program too, like with my husband, it's tough, man.
Yeah, and like I don't think it gets talked about enough that like sometimes you need to be away from your significant other. Yeah.
For sure.
Like you need Carly time, you need Molly time, you need Eric time, I need David time. Like you can't always just be attached to the hip. So that, and what I'm doing recently is, Eric will grill me about this after, is I want to get a home group again because I haven't had one in 3 years.
Damn.
I'm not going to grill you. I mean, that's your impersonal choice. And
no, yeah. I know. You're not going to like grill me like negatively, but you're going to be like, oh, so what was like, what brought you to that conclusion, David?
Are you missing something in your recovery? Is there something missing from your heart?
Yeah.
I think you need to go find it. Get with your people, David.
Yeah,
I asked
Herb, and I've never been in a home group with him, and I want to be in a home group with Herb so I can see him on a more regular basis. So we're working on that. So I'm going to find something, possibly a new area that I've never even been in.
Go to Nathan's home group.
Well, no, because like we talked about it, like going to a completely new area where we can sort of be anonymous again.
For sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I've been in my home group for the past couple years, and it's a women's meeting, which is like something I never expected for me. I never wanted to be in a women's meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was like new to me. And since I don't get – sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your question.
No, you're good. I was done.
Get to – go to meetings like as often, it's weird. Sometimes I walk in and I feel uncomfortable because I don't know like everyone like I used to. I felt like that last week.
That's a good feeling.
It isn't bad because you know you need to get uncomfortable to grow. So
yeah. What about you, Carly?
So what I'm doing differently than I didn't do at first.
You're also in a women's meeting.
I am. But I would say doing things that I'm like passionate about and not necessarily just like in recovery, right? Like actually in my life.
Yeah.
And in a way it's overcommitting, but I'm overcommitting to things that I am enjoying, like getting back into coaching, getting back into sports something that I'd done my whole entire life that I just stopped doing for, I don't know what. So that's been nice recently. And then what I need to start doing is investing in my relationships more. So getting into the women's meeting has made a big difference. And like reaching out to other women and actually going out with other women and not just staying at home, which I've gotten better at the past couple weeks.
Good.
It's new. Fantastic. We're getting there.
It's progress, not perfection. Well, thank you, Eric, for your lovely question. Yeah. And Molly, you are officially off the hot seat, so we would like to thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yay! We want to give you one quick minute to talk to anybody out there who's struggling, needs to hear that final message of hope. What do you have to say to them?
The final message would just be, just hang on, man. Like, it'll get better as long as you don't use. You have an opportunity for things to get better. Just, like, sit through it. Call somebody, talk to somebody. Just like hold on.
Awesome. Perfect. Yeah. Oh, and real quick, our good friend Zach M and a guest on the show just celebrated how many years last night?
Five.
5 years. Just quick snap to him. way to go, Zach. We love you, buddy. But here at Podcast Recovery, we are aiming to expand the scope of support for recovering addicts. Accessibility and convenience of helpful services is paramount to combating addiction. We work to bring the message of recovery to every addict, wherever and whenever it is needed. We believe that a powerful voice of recovery should be obtainable, practical, and untouchable money. Every addict deserves to hear a message of hope, and Podcast Recovery is here to provide it. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. Please go like, share, subscribe at all our media outlets. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, like, share, subscribe. Come help us be part of the Podcast Recovery family and home group. Donate to our Patreon because we are fully self-supporting and we need help keeping the mics on. So help us out with that, please. But everybody, thank you for joining us. Most importantly, everybody out there,
stay safe and stay clean.